Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, welcome to episode 5 of the Hockey News on the A podcast. I'm Jacob Stoller alongside Pat Williams as usual. We were thinking about starting today's show talking about a little bit more detail what we discussed last week, and that is Shane Wright's situation and the NHL-CHL player agreement. Turns out we will be doing that, but we'll be doing so with a bit of, you know, informative news. I'm sure by now when you're listening, it'll be out there. And that is what Hockey News broke yesterday for listeners, which is that the NHL-CHL player agreement has been extended. It was extended this past summer until June of 2029. So the reason we mentioned Shane Wright there is, as many know, there's sort of a situation where the Kraken, they can't send Wright to the AHL. It's either the NHL or the CHL. He's currently in the AHL on a conditioning stint, which they're allowed to do for 14 days. But otherwise, it's what I mentioned, because in the NHL-CHL agreement, it requires all draft picks under the age of 20 to return to their CHL club if they don't make the NHL roster. Now, if you're younger than 20, but you've played 4 full seasons, you can go to the AHL then. It's sort of one of those tricky gray areas. It's been kind of discussed a little bit. It kind of picked up, I think, last year during the COVID year, where you had Seth Jarvis dominating the AHL. Point per game player had to go back down to the WHL because of the rule. But yeah, we were originally going to discuss kind of, and we still will get to possible solutions and how you can really fix this. Now it's all kind of hypothetical because the hammer's been laid down this past summer, and that is how it's going to remain going forward. But yeah, Pat, I mean, what's your, as someone that covers the league as a whole, and I know you're, you know, passionate or very interested in this little topic as it is, what was your reaction to finding out that, you know, in fact, there is no solution on the horizon? This is how it's going to be, at least until 2029.
Well, yeah, two reactions. One is I'm surprised how far out it goes. That's 7 years from now. So you're not going to see that. I mean, this topic really, like you said, back in the 2021 pandemic season, this topic really started to percolate. Seth Jarvis is a great example. Jean-Luc Foudy, who we'll discuss later with the Colorado Avalanche, real good example of that, because he wasn't necessarily that top first round can't miss type prospect. He's 20 years old. He's already gotten, he's in his third full, like, 2.5, depending on how you define that pandemic season, full season. So, right. Way ahead of the curve for where he'd be otherwise. Typically, he'd be a month into his first pro season. Now he's got some real great experience, and I think he's that much better for it. So, so that's my first reaction, is how far out this goes. The second one is just, I thought that this was going to be something where there'd be a lot more of a pushback or at least some sort of modification, but, status quo definitely surprises me, because it's the theme of this show is just how much now NHL clubs invest in player development, how much in terms of coaching staff, in terms of time, in terms of really shuffling around the entire American Hockey League a few years back so that the players would be as close to home as possible.
Right.
And obviously that required investments of millions upon millions of dollars. Now, 2/3 of the AHL's teams are owned by NHL clubs in one way or another. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to see this kind of remain status quo, remain the way it's been, you know, for decades, a little surprised for sure.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is, you know, the way I was going to originally talk about this was sort of a meeting in the middle of what these two sides want. So the CHL, from my understanding, I'm talking to people throughout the day, a couple OHL front office members, one of which is an executive. Essentially, the CHL-NHL player agreement is designed there to protect the sort of the to ensure that the CHL continues being what it is, which is a top-tier development league. Now, obviously, money is a big part of it. There's no doubt about that. And something I learned today, I don't know if you knew this, but apparently it's not a lot of money, but you know, whenever there's somebody drafted out of the anywhere in the NHL, there's some money given to them. I didn't know that. So what I had really talked about originally was with Shane Wright, there's got to be some sort of system where you cap it at either, as one person suggested to me, top five, top eight pick, they're eligible to be in the AHL, right? For the player's development sake. Then the question becomes money, right? How does the CHL team get compensated for losing out on a Shane Wright, someone that brings people to seats and is a huge allure for their ticket sales? And what I originally thought was some sort of $300,000 to $500,000 sort of fee that the team would get for that player going to the AHL. Now, mind you, so when Mitch Marner, for example, played in the NHL as a drafted plus one or plus two player that he's still CHL eligible, London Knights would have gotten money for that. That's how it works. Now, the middle ground is the AHL. So what I would have proposed was something where there's some sort of transfer fee of whatever, $500,000 in the case of a top 10, maybe top 15 pick. I think that would be a good start. But someone actually in an NHL front office suggested this to me, and I thought it was really interesting, was the idea where you do one spot per team where you could do this, where you could have, you know, void the agreement of the traditional NHL CHL rules, have that prospect on your team if you pay the sum of their ELC to the CHL team. So then it becomes what, close to $1 million or whatever it may be. And that's pretty enticing. You can't say no, but also it's not like every team's going to be doing that. Some will obviously abuse it, but it's an interesting sort of middle ground there. The one more note I wanted to note was the CHL's point of view. I definitely think that there's a middle ground here and kind of what I just alluded to. But if you remove, say, 10 stars from the CHL, analytically, their NHL equivalency probably goes down to like 0.30. So the league gets diluted. You know, obviously that is to be expected. I think for CHL teams, their real worry is that they're going to lose. Like, those stars are everything for them, for the market, for everything. And there's a huge worry there. With it being extended now, though, you know, it'll be interesting to see, as we've alluded to, if we see more and more maybe CHL guys drop a little bit in the later teens of the first round because of, as you said, the advantage of being able to have a European guy and put him in there a lot earlier. So it's definitely an interesting situation. And yeah, you know, I was surprised as well when I, you know, learned from some people that was the case. And I know you were as well. It's definitely, I'm sure it's frustrating for some GMs, right, that are watching the right situation and thinking, gosh, you know, I wish we could get around this if we ever had to deal with it.
The European issue, I mean, I think it makes it's going to be an interesting wrinkle now to see coming drafts now. And I think that the biggest change was is that pandemic season really proved, I think, to a lot of NHL clubs and general managers, it was a test drive. Because I can tell you, before that, there was a real sense that 18-year-olds aren't ready for the AHL. They're not ready for the AHL on or off the ice. That was their perception, right?
Right.
You know, the Grand Rapids Griffins with Philip Zadina kind of dipped their toe in the water. That was back in 2018. Moritz Seider came as an 18-year-old a year later. He was a little bit of a different case because he had already played pro in Germany. But those guys handle it. I think today's player is far more prepared, both hockey-wise, but I think even more so off the ice. You know, I remember when I started in this business, players were, there was a lot more of less maturity, I would say. Now these players, I mean, they come in at 18 and they're all business. They're very well prepared. They understand the business. And so you don't have that off ice learning curve the same way that you did. So I think that was a big turning point for a lot of NHL GMs and really opening their eyes of like, all right, we can put this player into a pro world at 18, even if it's not the NHL. It's also comfort level too, because there's so much more control now by NHL clubs over their AHL operation. Especially, it's one thing to have a player three time zones away, like if you were the LA Kings for a long time. Now your LA Kings prospects are practicing in the same building. So there's just a much more of a comfort level that was not there before.
The one counter I would say, though, is two things. One, I think the COVID year, we always refer to it as a half year. So the talent was diluted.
Yes.
Right. You had, so that's the one counter I would say, is you had five guys or whatever it was on the taxi squad. So the competition automatically, the level of it was lower. Number two, I think there's something to be said, and I want to be very clear here. I think that Shane Wright's situation, there has to be some sort of compromise in the middle ground. And whether that is, as I alluded to, a top 10 protected sort of loophole, right, where you're able to send that guy there, or something of that nature, some sort of transfer fee. But I think for the majority, the fear would be that if you start throwing 18-year-old, 19-year-old guys there too loosely that aren't actually too good for the OHL, is it best for their development? And I don't think there's something wrong with, you know, if you're playing bottom, is it either bottom six NHL or learning, you know, in the same breath in the AHL versus dominating junior. I don't think there's anything wrong with dominating junior in a lot of cases. And I think the worry would be you bring these 18-year-olds up to the AHL where they're going from juniors to you're playing against people that are feeding their families. There are guys that will, to keep a job, lay you out. Even like there's you know, there's a big step there from boys to men in terms of that jump. So that would be, you know, my concern of making it too loosey-goosey. But as you said, and as we said, I think we can kind of agree, we've gone around it, but the most ideal thing would have been an exception where you have, whether it's what one person suggested, where it's you just pay a crazy amount of money, or where you it's top 10 protected and it's only certain situations. But yeah, Shane Wright's here. This is just, it's getting kind of silly at this point. And I think in terms of the player's development, I don't know if he's too good for the OHL. I think what the problem is Seattle's really prolonged this, and whatever's happened behind the scenes has made it this sort of thing where maybe, like, he didn't dominate in Kingston last year as much as he should have. Otherwise, he would have probably gone number one, in my opinion. So, yeah, you know, long story short, I think a lot of this falls on Seattle too for creating the situation. But, you know, it's tough because I'm sure Wright, when the 14 days he'll have with Bilesma and all of Coachella Valley, he's probably going to get the most momentum he'll have this year. Same as for the World Juniors.
And, you know, kind of a counterpoint to the counterpoint, I'll say is just that
absolutely
NHL clubs have every incentive to make sure that players aren't in over their head.
You're right.
We've seen that, you know, there have been situations, Philip Machard, for example, in Laval started there. Montreal sent him down right away, down to Kitchener. They were like, yeah, he's not ready. And, you know, the amount of, obviously the stake that they have in a first rounder, especially, is high. So I think if a player is truly not ready, I don't think they're going to keep him there a minute longer than they have to. And so I think that's the counterpoint. As far as Shane Wright, I mean, you just look at him, right? I watched his first game with Coachella Valley the other night against Calgary. And obviously you see the skill. I mean, he's a, you know, it's clear, but you can also see that there are things that he's there to work on. And we know he has, you know, goal scoring ability, and he had a really pretty goal. And I saw people saying, well, like, you know, there's nothing for him to learn in the AHL either. And it's, you know, I had to really restrain myself to not say that. I'm like, you know, it's not about, you know, who can put together the, you know, the shiniest highlight package. It's all the little details, you know, maybe they're boring details to the average, you know, fan or whatever, but play away from the puck, transition play, reload, every, you know, all that kind of stuff that coaches will hammer over and over and over again, but that's what you're there for, right? Like that's the side of the game that he's never had to completely develop. He's always been the most dominant player, you know, up until this point. And like you said, now you're playing against men. Now you're playing against guys feeding their families. It's a whole nother element now that he's never had to face. And so that's where you want to put him into that little bit of an uncomfortable situation and see how he handles it, and without the pressure trying to do so at the NHL level, because like, you know, we've said, you know, to each other off the air, even NHL's win now, right? Like there's no time to learn.
There's no coddling. There's no coddling NHL. It's the silliest thing. And like, I'm guilty of it as well. But the idea that like, even if you're like Arizona and you're going to just bring the kids up and like give them a chance, like do you understand from like head coach to trainer to video guy, everybody's job is on the line with this day in, day out. As someone explained to me, an NHL assistant coach, he says he couldn't be in the NHL because he laughs too much. And I thought he like, oh, he's being sarcastic, but no, it's all business. Yeah. So no, you're not just spoon feeding people's jobs. That's not happening. And further to that, I think, you know, with Shane Wright, maybe we're all looking at this wrong. Maybe it's not the NHL-CHL player agreement that's the problem. Maybe Seattle, maybe they've botched this because the agreement's not changing mid-year regardless. They should have made a decision when it was supposed. Something must have happened here because the comments of Ron Francis saying about how we want to get him up to 12 minutes or whatever, and then, you know, Haxtell barely plays him after that. I don't know. But it's a mess I think they've created. But we're going to move on here. And before we do that, I'm a little offended because, Pat, I see from your background you're in Toronto and you didn't tell me. So well, like, what's going on with that, man?
You're just my at Coca-Cola. Toronto. I'm
not Toronto. You're in Hershey. Okay. I thought you maybe were at Coca-Cola Coliseum. I mean,
I'm just switching up the background a little bit, getting a little variety. I might change it up next week as well.
All right. Well, maybe we'll get you in a different arena as well. So let's get to our prospect of the week, and that is Joel Hofer of the – did I say that right?
Yes.
I did? Ugh, I'm so bad with that stuff. Thankfully, I got this time. Joel Hofer of the Springfield Thunderbirds, St. Louis Blues prospect, 22-year-old, rocking 920 save percentage through his first 12 games this year, and he's playing on a Springfield team that surrenders the third most shots against per game. You know, he's not a freak athlete, but he's got confidence, and he has that 6'5 stature that makes up for – that lack of sort of freakish ability or mobility per se. He's been really on since the second half of last year, had a great playoff run with Springfield. Binnington, you know, he's got 4 years after this year, but he's already 29 and he's regressed quite a bit. Thomas Greiss, their backup, he's a pending UFA after this year. Would seem that there's a spot for him there in the time being, but just, you know, Pat, before we get to that, what do you think about his progression, where his game's at right now?
Two things. I love the fact that St. Louis last year paired him with Charlie Lindgren. For anyone that doesn't know Charlie Lindgren, you couldn't find a better goalie partner out there than Charlie Lindgren. Smart, very, you know, you watch that line that goalies have to walk in that competition, right? Like, he's going to push you as a competitor. He's going to force you to be at the best, but he's also going to be your biggest cheerleader. And I love that for a young goalie coming in at 20 years old. And then obviously the second thing was, Springfield had that great playoff run. Lindgren was actually up for about 2 to 3 weeks of that run. So that was Hofer's net that whole time, right? And then he was able to really get on a good rhythm there, going through that playoff experience. Then when Lindgren came back and he started getting to that third and fourth round, actually it was the fourth and fifth round, depending on how you know, with the AHL playoffs, but in any event, you know, conference final, and, you know, you're up against, you know, some of the best competition there is. Then they were able to go a little bit more of a tandem. So it was a little bit of best of both worlds, but the Hofer I saw, you know, come May, June of last season versus what I saw at the start of the year was night and day. And you could just see that development really took off, and it all started to fall into place for him. It started to make sense for him. And so fourth round pick, I just love what St. Louis has there with him.
It's crazy too, because he, you know, last year, throughout the year, even when he was, you know, on the upward trajectory of what was an up and down year, he wasn't sort of lights out. And then it seemed like the playoffs, he just changed a different gear last year.
Yeah, real steady, like didn't, you know, like you said, in the playoffs, you know, he wasn't, he wasn't necessarily dominant, but he was just reliable, right? And you know, we said on the NHL, right? Like it's far better to be consistent and reliable than to be dominant one night and then, you know,
yeah,
struggle the next night. Coaches love that, you know, dependability. And you know, he's playing for Drew Bannister. So Drew Bannister worked in the OHL with Sue Greyhounds for a while. So real good, highly respected teacher. You know, just in terms of player management and just the St. Louis Blues have a really good operation there. Tim Taylor runs a lot of it, you know, so from the front office side. And they've really turned that whole operation around, I think, from a player development standpoint. They had struggled for a while, but the last number of years.
Was that because the affiliations, Pat? Like, was there a struggle kind of with that?
Yeah, he ran into a real tough situation when they had actually sold their Peoria franchise. They went to Chicago for four years, which that worked. And then they got into a situation where they didn't have affiliation for a year. And that was the Binnington year. That was when Binnington went to Providence.
When he refused to be sent down, yeah.
So you had five different teams handling your players. That's far from ideal. They went to San Antonio, thought they had a great setup there. San Antonio got sold, went to Henderson. So they were able to get finally into Springfield last year, pandemic year. They had split with Utica. They split Utica with Vancouver. So a lot of kind of upheaval for a number of years. Finally, it settled down last year, and you could really start to see some of those fruits start to bear out. And you know, they had a great run, high pressure. I love that for a young goalie to face that. And here he is now. It's his net now. Lindgren's in Washington, and you're seeing that real next step that he's taking. It's a solid Springfield team, but it's certainly not the same Springfield team that it was last season.
For sure. Let's move on to our team of the week, and we're going to feature the Colorado Avalanche prospects. And now, it's really interesting for Colorado. Obviously, reigning Stanley Cup champions, they're doing okay, but they're definitely tied up against the cap, and they're going to be, especially with Nate Max, you know, impending deal kicks in. So ELC contributions are truly a necessity for them right now. They have a couple intriguing options. The first one we would have to start out with is Oscar Olsson. He actually made his NHL debut last night. They put him in the top six. First round pick in 2021, super skilled player. He's kind of struggled with sort of keeping it all together, consistency, sort of a perimeter player sometimes. But you know, it'd be interesting to know, Pat, what you think, what led to maybe him getting that call up and what he showed throughout this year, where he has 8 points in 16 games.
Colorado is, you know, sort of a similar situation to St. Louis was for the longest time. Colorado's development picture was really tough. They just could not do it on any sort of reliable basis. When they moved the team closer to home in 2018 with the Colorado Eagles, Greg Cronin came in. Longtime NHL assistant, longtime college coach, extremely demanding, extremely, like, he will pick apart your game. You may think you have your game down. He will find the smallest detail and really harp on it. And I think that's great for young players, right? Like, every player that comes into this league has obviously had a lot of success, but it's, again, like we said with Shane Wright, it's all those little details that you know, players don't necessarily want to think about, but are going to be what not only gets a player to the NHL but keeps them there. And so with an Olsson, I think one of the first things, you know, Cronin will ever always talk about is being a perimeter player. That won't fly with him at all. So I have no doubt that Olsson's heard a lot about that from Cronin. Probably, you know, hears it in his sleep at this point, but that's what's going to get him to the Avalanche and keep him there, right? And so really good development pitcher that they have there with the Avs now. And I think Olsson's a great example of that.
Another guy that was in consideration for the call-up, and the reason I know this is because Jared Bednar said it himself, which is, you know, that's pretty high praise. Call-up would be great, but to get that recognition out there is great. And that is Jean-Luc Foudy, 20-year-old center, has 12 points in 16 games this season. He's been a real dominant force at even strength. Really getting that poise in his game and that confidence that maybe would have lacked in the first, you know, couple of years, as you mentioned before earlier in the podcast. He came in was he 18, Pat, or 19? Yeah. During the COVID year. Last year, he really got his feet wet in his first full season. And now, as I said, with, you know, 12 points in 16 games, really starting to be an offensive contributor for the Eagles. Pat, what can we tell Avalanche fans about this prospect?
Well, start with Foodie in that COVID season. I love the fact that he went to Sweden for that first half or so while there was no hockey in North America. Played in the third division there. It was a place to play, right? You know, rather than sit at home training, and that's all fine and well, but like at that age, you need games too, right? And so he went up there and got it. So he hit the ground running. Remember, if you think back to that time, a lot of players had gone almost a full year, calendar year, without playing a competitive game when that 2021 AHL season started. So he was already ahead of the curve, got his feet wet, played that half season there. Then was able, because of an exemption last year, to stay at the AHL level rather than go to the OHL. So by the time he's 20 years old, he already has 2.5 seasons, or he's in his second, or I should say he's got a season and a half now. You know, he's in his third season, depending on how you define the seasons. But either way, like, he's well ahead of his peers in that group. You know, this is a third round pick. Just a great opportunity for him. So he's been able to work really closely on a day-to-day basis now with Avalanche development coaches, with Cronin, with the whole staff at the Eagles, going on 2 years now. So it doesn't surprise me that he's now kind of in the running for some call-ups. And I won't be surprised one bit to see him, get a good look, especially as the season goes in the second half.
Someone that I think a lot of people would have maybe expected the first guy up would be Ben Myers, signed out of University of Minnesota as a undrafted free agent, couldn't compete with the team in the play. Why was that, actually? Another thing about it. Why? What's the rule again with why couldn't he compete in the playoffs? Because he signed after the trade deadline. Would that be why?
Yeah, I believe that was.
Okay, after the deadline. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. So Ben Myers signs with the Avalanche. After trade deadline last year, could not play, but he played in the playoffs where they won the cup, which, God, that's a tough pill to swallow. But he had a couple games in last year. He's played a couple games in Colorado this year, and then he's been in the AHL as well. I believe injuries have kind of sidelined him a bit, if I'm not mistaken, but hasn't been able to get a lot of runway, but I think he's definitely an interesting player in terms of their future depth.
Yeah, everyone you talk to, right, like the first word is just, he's versatile and he's plays a really complete game, and he's got that maturity in his game that comes with being a little bit older, playing 3 years at the University of Minnesota. So obviously an elite program. And it really, I think, speaks to the idea of, I think why the college path is becoming so attractive for a lot of players. I was talking to someone the other day and just, I don't ever recall this many high-end college players at the AHL level as there are now. And it made a lot of sense, just in the sense that, players, some of them are late bloomers, right? Like, what you are at 18 or 19 versus what you are at 23, 24 is night and day for some players. And I think he was a great example of that. He needed that extra time, I know he put on a lot of muscle while he was in college. And that's one of the big advantages of that path is, it's a lighter schedule. There's more time for training, more time for practice. And so I think he really benefited from that. So he's definitely he's going to be a coach's dream, in the sense that he's very reliable. And, as we said, that's really the best thing you could be as an AHL type call up is to be somebody that the Jared Bednar or, whoever is the NHL coach is just somebody that you can have that trust level. I think players that can do that, they find their way out of the AHL a lot faster than players who maybe have, a little more flashy skill or something a little bit more excitement in their game. Just reliability is key for an AHL call-up.
The last guy I want to talk about is Alex Bouquet. Definitely someone where I may not be the best person on this. I've only seen about 8 of his games in recent times, but I think that I can understand why he was sort of looked at as maybe a tweener, slow boots and maybe not the most NHL upside on the surface, but he's been a great player defensively and just driving play with Colorado this year. We'd be remiss not to mention him. Third round pick of the Avalanche in 2019. He's got 7 points in 16 games this year. The majority of those have been at even strength. Is he a guy that could be in the running, or is he sort of, caught between a busy cast of guys that we just mentioned?
It is a busy cast. He's a little bit more of a raw type player. You know, you can definitely see there's something to work with there, but great shot. That's kind of the first thing that I noticed. I think anyone would notice. So that's right off the bat. And then but skating is obviously really, I think for a lot of players, it's the thing that separates them from the NHL to the AHL. The AHL is in some ways it's a skating school almost now as much as a hockey school in that sense that, there are so many players now that, that's what their main focus is. That's what's going to either kind of be the difference between whether or not they make it long term. But skating. But players, that's what they're there for. And that's one aspect. And the second part is that trust level, right? And Greg Cronin has that trust level, and that's a tough trust to earn, right? That he is not an easy coach to impress, not an easy coach to win that trust, but for a young player to do that, I think that speaks well to what he does have. And, if you can get that skating, you're never going to be, dynamic skater, but if you can at least get it up, to a certain standard, I think, then that really does open up some possibilities for him, with the Avs down the road.
The stride is probably his biggest thing, like his skating stride, right? Technically speaking. So right. I like what you mentioned about it doesn't need to be necessarily a dynamic skater, but the fundamentals are probably his biggest obstacle.
And the Avs invest a lot into that that area of skating coaches and development. So, I like his chances, right? That's one thing I've learned, right? Don't write players off too early. They'll surprise you. They'll make you look silly. And, I think he has a good shot. Next couple of years obviously are going to be crucial. I think that players now, there's just so much more of an awareness now, a willingness to work on things too, right? There used to be more of a mentality, well, I'm just going to work on the things I'm good at.
Right.
Well, that's great. Right. But the things that you're not good at are what are going to separate you. So I think players now really do have a better, they're much more dialed into to what they need to do. And communication's better two ways between the NHL teams and the players. And so I think that really does facilitate a lot more efficient development.
Absolutely. Well, that's all we have for this week. And, thanks again for joining us. Happy we went over, the Shane Wright and CHL player agreement whole thing. We didn't have a guest this week, but we definitely had quite a topic to compensate for that. Thank you so much for listening. And yeah, we'll see you guys next week. We'll probably have a guest as well. And again, as I've always mentioned, and some of you have had some great suggestions, if you have a suggestion for a guest, player, coach, whatever it may be, tweet at Pat, myself, or the Hockey News. We'll be sure to try our very best to accommodate that. Thank you, guys.